This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Cray gets big defense win, SGI makes a storage buy, and IBM invents a new algorithm. Hello everyone and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for February 26, 2010, available every Friday on iTunes. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined once again by Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. Welcome back, Addison.
Thanks, Michael. Happy to be back.
Yeah, I guess you were on a little rest and relaxation vacation over the past week or so. How did that go?
Yeah, the skiing was very nice in Lake Tahoe, and the internet in the cabin kept me on top of some of the work and news while I was away, but very nice trip.
Oh, it must be nice to take a vacation. I can't seem to manage when I'm sort of the CNN of HPC, and the news never stops, unfortunately. In fact, we saw this week there's a bunch of news. Let's start out with the Cray store. We saw Cray this week announced it had won a big DoD contract for the High Performance Computing Modernization Program. They got three new systems that are going to go in sometime over the next year or two into three of the supercomputing centers there, and it was worth $45 million, which included multi-year services, and it's the largest HPCMP system award ever done by a single vendor. So that was good news for Cray.
Excellent. That
was really great. What I wondered about, though, was, you know, why the DoD actually gave one vendor such a big win. I mean, they typically don't do this. They like to kind of spread the love around sometimes. They've got different systems at those six centers, and these are three centers involved here, and they gave them all to Cray. What do you think of the significance of this is?
Well, first of all, I'll just say that this is a great signal that Cray is continuing the momentum that they carried out of 2009. Coming out of supercomputing, I thought they were about the best show they could have possibly had. I said that they had a great 2009. They had really good financial results for the year that were essentially break even in a down economy. And now to get this big win is a very strong start in the first quarter of 2010. Answering your question directly, you know, in terms of spreading that out between different vendors, what I see the DoD doing that is because they don't want all their eggs in one basket in case one of the vendors is potentially going to have a problem. And
sure,
we went through a decade where, you know, Cray and SGI, which were architectures that they liked looking at, weren't, you know, had viability concerns. And therefore, you'd want to get in some of the other larger or more stable vendors. And, you know, not to slight someone like IBM with a Blue Gene system, but if the DoD decided that these Cray Baker systems were the ones that they wanted for these sites, going with Cray across the board, I think, is just a signal of confidence that they feel like there isn't a risk that Cray is not going to be there, that they're confident in Cray, and therefore they're just going to get the systems they want.
Yeah, I think I've got to agree with you. And certainly Cray, of all the vendors that might have been up for this, they're the ones most focused on HPC. And maybe the DoD just figured, okay, this is what we're focused on for this contract. We want the guys that are focused on it. I think you see some of these other companies that, you know, obviously they have HPC a portfolio, but they, you know, their focus tends to float in and out of HPC as far as the level of commitment. And, you know, maybe the DoD says, I want the guys that do HPC for a living here. And you know, maybe that's one of the reasons they picked them.
Well, yeah. And the most significant competitor to Cray in that kind of high end is going to be from IBM with the Blue Genes. And it's not like the government doesn't own any Blue Gene systems anywhere. But the Baker systems are going to come in with something different. I'm going to go ahead and plant a flag and say that I think Cray is back. And they don't have any viability concerns. They had a really strong 2009. They're setting up for a strong 2010. And if you want the Baker systems, you can have the Baker systems, and you don't have to worry about hedging your bets anywhere.
Right, right. Now, one of the centers is using, I don't think any of the centers at the DoD are using Blue Genes, but one of them is using the power systems, and they could have gone with the Power 7 systems that IBM's introduced
this
year. And they could have gone with SGI Ultraviolet, which SGI is introducing this year, but but they didn't. And I thought that was significant. And, you know, there's probably a myriad of reasons, you know, that we probably just touched on here. But I think it is significant they went with the XT line and with Cray.
Sure. Well, I mean, certainly you're not just going to go with Cray by default. There's competition up there. You mentioned the power systems and the ultraviolet systems. The only one I think has really dropped out would be from Sun with their large constellation-based systems. You and I have discussed that we think they're really out of that market, so you can kind of cross them off the list.
Right.
But other than that, there was probably an evaluation. The centers decided they wanted Baker's, and without the viability concerns, Baker won across the board.
Yeah, and supposedly Baker's is slated to come out in Q3 this year, and if they do, they could probably garner a little of that contract money in 2010 and, you know, put that to the bottom line for profit this year. So we'll see if they can keep on schedule and deliver those Bakers and get some money out of this contract for this year.
Yeah, well, I think their year is setting up pretty well regardless, especially at the high end. I know they still want to get more mileage out of the entry-level systems, but, you know, I think you'll see that business unit trying to focus there as well.
Right, and as, you know, I discussed with Chris last week, there also sounds like they're going to introduce a, sort of another mid-range system between the CX-1 and the Mini XT systems to get the whole market, and it'll be interesting to see that. And they're definitely expanding their portfolio to get more of the market.
I'm not at liberty to discuss those.
Well, they just hinted at their last investor meeting, so we'll see you know, when and if that happens this year. So speaking of SGI, we saw that story come out this week. They acquired the assets of Coban Systems, which is a storage vendor that's been out there for a while. They've got the storage product that uses this massive array of idle disk technology. It's been out there for a while, but they've had their problems, and they were in foreclosure, and SGI got them for a song, $2 million. So they picked them up. Looking at it, I'm not sure how it fits into their overall strategy of SGI, especially in the high performance area, maybe more in the cloud computing side of the business. What do you think of this buy and what it means to the company?
Yeah, well, I think there's a few things that it signals. First of all, they've got to have some confidence that they still have the cash to be doing acquisitions even when they're cheap. So that's got to be a good sign of some sort. But, you know, I think Mark Barrenechea likes keeping his eyes on things that are in foreclosure, and what he can pick up as good assets.
Right.
In terms of where it fits in the SGI strategy, I agree with you. It's probably a little better aligned with the traditional rackable business, more of the high-end enterprise data center cloud space. But in the merger of high-end traditional and data center, scalable data center technologies, certainly could spill over into some of the edge HPC application areas. So I think you might see some of this in HPC. The other important thing that I think it signals is the importance of storage in SGI's future. We all talked about after the merger that they would have to go down the list of technologies and decide what areas they are investing in and what areas they're not investing in, because they couldn't afford to keep doing everything. And, you know, one thing they took the emphasis off of was graphics and visualization, at least in terms of what's being designed in-house. But one thing they're increasing the emphasis on is storage, which to me is actually probably a smart business plan. We're seeing storage as one of the healthiest product sectors going forward.
Yeah, that's true. And you're right. It is, you know, that is one of the sectors that seems to be doing much better than certainly the server sector as far as profit and margin. And yeah,
both profit margin and growth, Michael. The storage sector is outgrowing the server sector.
One concern for me that I would see here, though, is so they're just going through this merger they've done with Rackable and SGI, and here they're adding, you know, some more to the mix, and they've already got a storage portfolio they picked up from SGI. So my concern would be, you know, here's another thing to integrate into something sort of that's in the air right now. They're trying to pull everything together, and, you know, to be able to manage that. Maybe they'll put this technology sort of, on cruise control for a while and then upgrade it to the next generation or integrate it into their product line for now. But, I just think this is, they probably saw a good deal and they wanted to get it for a couple million. That's really nothing to any size company. But, I'm just sort of wondering if this is just could create a little more churn in the company as far as managing it and integrating new people and new technology.
Yeah, I don't have that same concern, Michael, because MADE is such a unique product type that it doesn't really overlap with any of the storage technologies they already had in development. So you can really look at this as more of a product line extension kind of thing. It'd be like if they bought a tape company. Right. Tape is part of the storage infrastructure. MADE is potentially part of a storage infrastructure that they're not currently covering. So if their strategy is to cover more types of storage options for their data center customers, then it makes sense from a product line completeness standpoint.
Yeah, that's true. Although I would say the portfolio they had wasn't doing well enough on its own, which is basically why they went into foreclosure, and they had some competitors. Their chief competitor is Nexan, that has MADE technology as well, but it's a more sophisticated version, MADE 2.0 basically. So it seems like if SGI really wants to make this work, they're going to have to put some investment behind it to upgrade it or integrate it into their current product line. And so that would be my area of concern. It's not just something they can say, oh, we've got a product portfolio that's, self-sustaining. No, not really. They've just got some technology. They've got to invest in it.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, but it's a different area of concern. Your question here is, can they afford it and can they be profitable and make money?
Right.
And this is a point we've made before, that as much as we might like the roadmap decisions or the products or the technologies coming out of SGI post-merger, they have a significant amount of work to do to prove that they're going to be profitable on an ongoing basis, because neither side was wildly profitable in advance of the merger. So everyone's going to be kind of watching the quarterly results from SGI to see if a profit can emerge.
Right. Okay. Well, let's jump into our next story, which is a little deeper and a little more user unfriendly. But IBM Research made an interesting announcement this week that we covered at HPC Wire. They unveiled this quote unquote breakthrough technology for a mathematical algorithm that reduces the computational costs associated with analyzing the quality of data. And it has to do
You used a phrase, user unfriendly. The algorithm itself is supposed to be very user friendly.
Right.
It's just complicated to talk about, is all you meant.
Right, because it has to do with uncertainty quantification, which is a term that's used quite a bit in the HPC space as far as validating data sets and looking at the trustworthiness and risk of data that you gather. But it's an algorithm that can apply to basically all types of modeling and simulation in HPC, as well as a lot of analytics applications out there, whether they're HPC or not. And the big news here is that these types of algorithms, the traditional algorithm for uncertainty quantification, took a lot of computational horsepower, and in a sense, you needed, for any size, any good size data set, you needed petaflop or even exaflop systems to make it work. And these guys have come up with something two orders of magnitude less in needed computational power. So basically, they've made this so that regular size systems and even smaller systems, like clusters and even workstations, if the data set is small enough, can use this algorithm to do this very high level quality management on data. And it could have rather far reaching effects in our industry, HPC and otherwise.
Yeah, it's one of these problems that when you first try to describe it, it sounds really specific. But then when you look at the nature of HPC applications and workflows, you find that within our world, this is actually largely what they're talking about. And the area of uncertainty quantification mostly applies to where you have large, complicated data sets, and you're trying to predict what's going to, and you've got an application that's going to model what happens in that data set over time under some condition, and there's a high degree of data dependency between data points in that application, and therefore, the answer to the question of how do we know if we got the answer right? You know, it's hard to know, but what you can ask is how good was the data? And therefore, what they call uncertainty quantification is an important metric here. And this has to do with applications like I'm going to model the release of an effluent into a reservoir and try to see how it might spread. Or I'm going to do a worldwide economy simulation and model what happens if three banks in Hong Kong suddenly fail. Or I've got a batch of nuclear material and I'm trying to model what's going to happen to that batch of nuclear material over time under certain conditions. In each case, I've got a very complicated, large dynamic data set and I'm going to do something to it and I want to see what happens over time. Typically, you see a lot of these Monte Carlo simulations where I test a million different scenarios in as little time as I possibly can. But the quality of the data is really an important factor in the success or failure of the model, of the simulation.
Right, right. Now, this won't actually validate the models, but right, it validates the data. And I think, you know, maybe where an application where it might hit a little closer to home for the average person might be in, global climate modeling.
Sure.
The models are pretty well wrung out, although there's still development going on. But, you know, there's so much data going into those models. It would be great if the quality of that data could be verified in a very cheap way. And people could come out and say, well, we've done this work. We know the data is good. We trust it now because we've run it through this algorithm. So that might sort of help that cause. And really, any analytics application inside or outside of HPC that has data quality issues can benefit from this. The interesting part is IBM has supposedly patented this algorithm, so for the time being at least, they're going to be able to take advantage of it themselves, so they're going to start client engagements with some of their business customers, I think, to get this off the ground.
Right.
But I don't know if this algorithm will ever make it out into the general population. I don't know how you keep this thing under intellectual property rules. Yeah. But for the time being,
I wish them luck with their patent. You can legally patent an algorithm. It's just notoriously difficult to enforce. I suppose if anyone can, it's IBM.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if that happens. But for the time being, it's an IBM only thing. But you got to figure at some point, people are going to develop similar type algorithms to do it themselves. If this is really the value that IBM is talking about, it's going to be in much demand.
Well, I mean, this is the sort of thing that's easy to miss as a news story, but I think you've done an excellent job highlighting it, Michael, and writing a feature story on it, because this is the sort of thing that 10 years down the road could be being done at much smaller levels of scale effectively for a wider array of problems with some real positive effect in how applications and workflows are run. So it's potentially a very significant story. It's the sort of thing that makes me glad there are so many people smarter than me out there in the world, a half dozen of which are going to call me and tell me I miscategorized what this algorithm is doing. So, come on, bring it on. I'll have you as a guest on the show.
Yeah, I mean, it is quite complex. I mean, the researchers that worked at IBM in Zurich, have been working on this thing for over a year and a half, and they've just basically published recently. So it is rocket science in almost the literal sense of it. So it's good stuff. Although the code, the researcher told me, was only about 1,000 lines of code. So, I mean, basically this is a simplification of basically a brute force method of doing this, and they whittled it down to about 1,000 lines. So it's not a big piece of code, but it's a powerful piece of code, apparently. So,
well, some of the cleverest code is like that. It would be like if you came up with a new sorting algorithm that arranged things faster, or
right,
better yet, an algorithm for factoring large numbers faster, right?
As
opposed to a brute force method. So these algorithms can be very tight and very powerful when you come up with a clever idea.
Exactly. Well, I think that basically wraps it up for this week. We'll be following news stories as the month ends. Actually, the month is ending. We're gonna jump into March by the time the next show comes around, and we'll pick it up again.
Time for March Madness.
Yes, sir. Very good. All right, we'll talk to you next week, Addison.
Thanks, Michael.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.